The reason why the Founding Fathers did not include a balanced budget requirement in the Constitution is because they felt it would be superfluous. Paying off the national debt and balancing the budget was considered a high priority of the early administrations. Consider the following comments by some of our nation's early leaders. Thomas Jefferson: the public debt is the greatest of dangers to be feared by a Republican government. John Quincy Adams: stewards of the public money should never suffer without urgent necessity to be transcended, the maximum keeping the expenditures of the year within the limits of its receipts. And James Monroe: after the elimination of the public debt, the government would be left at liberty to apply such portions of the revenue as may not be necessary for current expenses to such other objects as may be most conducive to the public security and welfare. From 1879 until about 1933, the federal government operated under an implicit balanced budget amendment. Spending remained low and rarely exceeded revenues. To the greatest extent possible, the existing debt was reduced. As a consequence, federal spending as a share of GNP never rose above 10%. In the mid-1930s, the rise of Keynesian economics gave politicians the economic rationale to increase government spending to solve the nation's economic problems. As a consequence, the balanced budget discipline was abandoned, and federal spending exploded. Today, federal spending as a share of our national income stands at 22 to 23%, near historic levels. In effect, deficit spending has become the norm. Because there are no limits to the availability of deficit spending, members of Congress find it extraordinarily difficult to resist such spending. On the one hand, every dollar of deficit spending creates some measure of political advantage by pleasing parts of a member's constituency. On the other hand, there is no need for members to incur equivalent political disadvantage by having to raise anyone's taxes. All the balanced budget amendment does is eliminate from our system this built-in bias towards spending caused by the unlimited access to deficit spending. Critics of the amendment charge that it is a hollow gimmick, a substitute for making real choices about how to balance the budget. Perhaps the best way to respond to this charge is to examine how balanced budget constraints have worked on the state level. Virtually every state, except Vermont, has some sort of statutory or constitutional requirement to balance its budget. According to economist Bruce Bartlett, in 1933, total federal spending was $3.9 billion, and total state and local spending was $7 billion. 50 years later, however, the situation was almost reversed. By 1993, federal spending had risen to $1.5 trillion, while total state and local spending had risen to $865 billion. The fact that state governments were required to make real choices and balance their budgets while the federal government did not was the major reason why federal spending has dramatically outraced state and local spending. Without a balanced budget amendment, this nation could be looking at federal deficits in the trillions of dollars within 15 years. I was sent here by people who will not accept such a fate. The proposed amendment does not read into the Constitution any particular level of spending or taxation, or mandate particular economic policy outcomes. It only restores the historical relationship between levels of public spending and available public resources. National solvency is not, nor should it be, a partisan political principle. It should be a fundamental principle of our government. Mr. President, I yield the floor.